It sounds so good.
They're singing so well.
Yeah.
It's really emotional.
It is. It really brings you right back, isn't it?
Hello and welcome to Things Musicians Don't Talk About with your hosts, Hattie Butterworth.
And me, Rebecca Toll.
Within our vibrant musical world, it can often feel that the struggles and humanity of musicians is lost and restricted.
Having both suffered in silence with mental, physical and emotional issues, we are now looking for a way to voice musicians' stories, discuss them further and to connect with the many others who suffer like we have.
No topic will be out of bounds as we are committed to raising awareness for all varieties of struggle.
So join me, Hattie and guests as we attempt to bring an end to stigma by uncovering the things musicians don't talk about.
Musicians Don't Talk About is supported by the Royal Society of Musicians. Since 1738, they have been providing vital financial assistance, advice, and guidance to music professionals unable to work due to accident, illness, stress, or anxiety. Whether you're working as a performer, administrator, technician, or teacher, and everything in between, they're there to help. If you know of someone in need, you can contact them in confidence by visiting their website, which is www.rsmgb.org, or you can contact them by ringing 020 7629 6137. Support their work by becoming a member or donating today.
Welcome back to TMDTA, Things Musicians Don't Talk About. It's me, Becca, and it's actually New Year's Eve. At the time of recording, I'm sitting in the study with my new fir tree candle, and it's raining very heavily outside. It's very dark. I feel very cozy. I feel very reflective. Looking back over the past year, just done a little post on our Instagram about what we've been up to over the past year. And in my personal life, I've been reflecting a lot with my partner as well, and kind of looking forward to our goals for next year and stuff, which I don't tend to subscribe to. I'm not a big New Year's resolution person, but for some reason this year it kind of spoke to me a bit more. So I'm feeling very mellow. I'm also going out to a New Year's Eve party tonight, so I'm trying to keep my energy reserved because I know it's going to be a long night. But by the time you listen to this, it will be 2024. So happy New Year. We have the incredibly uplifting James Partridge with us today, as you'll hear. I don't need to really introduce him much more than to say that he's that guy that you see all over social media doing those amazing primary school hymn banger videos that make everybody just go crazy. It's a great chat. I'm sure you'll have a great time listening to it. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening. If you fancy supporting us via our Patreon, where we host our monthly peer support sessions, head over to patreon.com/TMDTA. You can also, we have a fundraiser page and also a buy me a coffee page. All sorts of ways you can support us. Or if that doesn't speak to you, please do share our podcast with a friend, a loved one, an enemy, your nemesis, anybody. It really helps us to get our podcast out there if you share it with people, you know. I would say like and subscribe, but I feel very imposterish saying that, so I won't say it. Anyway, on with the podcast.
So we're here today with the amazing James Partridge, who I'm sure you will have seen TikToking around.
Is that a verb now?
TikToking around and
the Christmas tree.
Bringing back all the flipping memes. But thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing? How's life?
Very well. I had a show last night, which was great fun. Had a lot of people packed into a cocktail bar in Smithfield.
Where you'd usually sing hymns, of course.
Yes, exactly. This is the hilarious thing about it, because I'm trying to find venues to put on the show. and I'm basically teaching all day and getting home and sending emails and saying, would you be up for hosting a night of primary school sing-alongs? And a lot of the venues are just like, delete.
Literally.
Like, what is this?
That's kind of the thing, though, yeah. I guess. If you're not there or you, like, don't get it, mm-hmm. it sounds sort of sad.
Yeah.
Just to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
But then, like, the emotion that you get from people...
That's the thing, because I've actually had a number of people come on their own to the show because they haven't been able to convince anyone else to come. And I absolutely love that, because the one thing I kind of want to for the show to do is to like build up like a community of people that are just like, you know, up for singing along and getting into like a nostalgic kind of positive atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is, actually, I've seen people come along on their own and make friends and you know... Where else can you do that, really,
as an adult? Primary school.
Yeah, so the first time I actually kind of thought of this idea, I did like a bit of a variety show, and I did include some of the bangers, and it was in a venue that's normally like a drag club.
Yes.
So I'm playing in all sorts of different venues, so I was up in Preston and played in an ex-library, which didn't turn into an art centre.
Everyone going, shh.
Yeah, exactly, shh. Fingers on lips, please. And I played in Brighton Comedia, which is normally like a comedy club. And
I guess the fact that it's so unique means that you can kind of pitch to anywhere.
Yeah.
It's quite kind of open.
As long as they don't delete the email.
Yeah, exactly.
But really, I think it'd be great if you just kind of take us back to like the genesis of your TikTok, I guess. Or who were you before this all blew up for you? What was going on and why did it all start?
Yeah, so I left uni in 2012 and then moved to London without a job, which was extremely scary.
Yeah.
And then did whatever I could to just live in London. I just thought to myself, even if it means like, you know, standing on a street corner with a McDonald's sign, I don't mind what I do as long as I'm in London because it's a place to be. So I did like some temping jobs, then I worked for PRS for music for a couple of years, which was nothing to do with music. It was very, very admin based and slightly soul destroying, unfortunately. But I spent my lunch times going to the Yamaha piano shop on Wardour Street, and literally just like I'd go out and literally spend the entire hour just like putting headphones on and play the piano, and then I'd come back to the work and then get through the rest of the day. And then after a while, I was like, this is not really working. Hmm. I'd actually done a little bit of work for the Royal Philharmonic Society, which I absolutely loved. And so I helped them out with their awards ceremony after I left PRS. And then feels like a very long-winded way of working.
Yeah, no, it's great.
How it came about. But then I had an audition for Gareth Malone's Voices. I don't know if you ever heard
of that. Yes.
Which was amazing. And for me, that was a real game changer because... I'd sung in choirs all my life, and I when I was at school, choir singing was not a cool thing whatsoever, and so I tried to start like a barbershop group at school, and it was not cool. and then I went on like the National Youth Choir and Eton choral courses and all that stuff, and I thought, oh, I finally found my tribe. And this was a lot of fun doing the Gareth Malone Choir because it was a choir of like 18 to 25 year olds, something like that, and we were thrown into this crazy thing. We did these amazing gigs, and then after that finished, I thought I can't go back to doing what I was doing, so I went freelance, and I've been teaching since then in lots of different schools. And
so singing teaching,
yeah, okay. and piano, yeah. Mostly singing, and then got to lockdown, which was great for all musicians and everyone, and took the teaching online, and I made loads of backing tracks for my pupils, because teaching singing on Zoom is a hilarious thing, because first of all, I tried to like play in time with them, and I was trying to preempt them by playing like 1 second ahead of them, you know,
it doesn't work.
To catch up with the lag, but it didn't really work, so I just made a load of backing tracks, put them on YouTube. And then someone said to me at the beginning of 2021, oh, have you heard of this TikTok? And I was like, yes, it's the app for like people dancing.
Yeah.
And teenagers, yeah. And I think at the time it pretty much was. And then I started putting up some singing tips, some literally like all music theory tips as well. Yeah. Like, you know, just trying to be really ambitious, how to read music in 60 seconds. So like teaching the staff and how to read the treble and bass clef and all that kind of stuff. And then I did a few comedy skits, but literally it was like the, I don't know, like the 10th video I put up was, actually it was Easter Sunday. And I was like, oh, we need some Easter content.
Yes.
And so I put up a video, which was my top 5 Easter hymns for Easter Sunday. And that did quite well when I put that up. And then I thought, the next day I was like, oh, what else would be quite good? And then I remembered this book that we all sang from, which I have here, and it's called a blue cover with a load of kids singing on the front called Come and Praise. And
ours were red.
Well, actually the red one was the update.
I'm an updated gal.
I had the piano anthology which was red.
Yes.
And that had Come and Praise 1 and 2. And it had all the songs, and I opened up the contents page and I was like, oh my god. Morning is Broken, Water of Life, All Things Bright and Beautiful, Autumn Days, and the list keeps going on and on. All these bangers. So I thought, oh, let's make a top 10 of my favourite primary school assembly songs.
Yes.
Put it online and it kind of went a bit wild, and that's the genesis.
Oh my,
that's
gosh.
A very long answer to your question.
No, but then
where
do you go from there, I guess?
Mm.
This blew up, and so were you like, people clearly like this, I'll make separate videos of them, or?
Yeah, so I think the initial thing was like I did the top 10, then I did like 20 and then 30 and 40. So I did like I did quite a few lists. And then I kind of wanted to branch out pretty quickly. So I just stopped doing that idea and then did some other things like kids theme tune, like top 10. And then I was getting more into, I did like some a cappella close harmony things like sea shanties and Beach Boys style harmonies and things like that. And then I did a few like, here are 5 pieces of classical music you might not have heard before, and things like that. But none of them got like they all have got like nice reactions, but none of them had like the massive kind of response
pull of the
yeah.
primary school
yeah.
nostalgia, because
so,
it's such a kind of weird reaction you get when you hear it again. I guess
what is it about, what do people resonate so thoroughly with, because it's a very like visceral nostalgia.
I get all sorts of comments on the videos, so you just have like nostalgia unlocked.
Yeah.
So true.
You know, I don't know what I had for dinner last night, but I remember the words to these songs I haven't sung in 20 years.
Yeah.
I did actually have one of my favourite comments recently was, these songs slap harder than Will Smith at the Oscars.
Oh,
I love it.
Which is, yeah,
it's so true.
That's hilarious. but yeah, no, I think it's hearing something that you haven't heard in a long time, no matter what it is, it just puts you in a time and place, right? Whether it's like songs you sung or a piece of classical music or, you know, a pop banger from the 90s, whatever it is, it'll put you in a certain time and place. And I think a lot of people have very kind of, whether it's rose-tinted glasses or whatever, you know, have very positive memories of primary school, and you kind of feel safe. And a lot of these songs are just very happy and positive and upbeat, and there's nothing cynical. I think one of the great things is there's nothing cynical about it. And I think a lot of things now in adult life are very cynical, and there's like a hidden agenda to things, and this is just like pure, you know, wholesome joy singing these songs. So I think that's part of the reason why it resonates a lot with people. And then obviously a lot of those memories come with like funny things that happened at school and all these other things, so yeah.
I guess a lot of the like hymns are intrinsically linked to religion. And are you religious?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting thing really, because I was brought up going to church, so I went, you know, I kind of grew up, I literally learned to read in my local church choir. Like they were like, if you could, so I think I was 5 when I joined it, and then just like did the Sunday school and all that kind of stuff. But it was more of kind of like something to do, really.
Yeah.
And then I've sung in a lot of churches in London as part of like, you know, their choir or like depping around and things like that. And I would say that I'm not like actively religious, but you know, that was my upbringing. And I didn't go to like a church school or anything like that. It was just like a kind of normal state primary school. It is interesting. And the thing is, I've actually not really had much pushback against the religious stuff.
I was wondering
that,
yeah.
And And one thing I really want to make sure is that it is a safe space for anyone that comes to like a show or sings along or just watches a video, and I'm not pushing the religious side of it at all. But if you do have a faith and you want to take that from it, then I think that's brilliant and that's great. And I've had, you know, vicars come to the show and yes. things like that, and they've loved it. And that's the thing, because basically the way the show works is I kind of so actually just to set this up, I am doing a show off this of the primary school assembly bangers at the moment and touring it around the country, basically it is a sing-along show. So I've got a QR code that people scan, and it pulls up a PDF that I put together of all the lyrics.
Oh my gosh.
And
the best karaoke.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you've got sing-alongs of all sorts of stuff, but there's not been anything of this. And then I intersperse it with kind of stories from school, and I kind of structure it as part of the school year. So we go through like the summer term. We've got the Harvest Festival bangers, yes. We've got the Harvest Festival.
Oh my gosh.
And then it gets to like the summer holidays, and I talk about going on like Cub Camp and Scout Camp and singing all like the campfire songs, and then we get into like TV shows we watched in the summer and Disney movies that we watched and all this kind of stuff. So
how long is the show?
It's 2 hours with a 20-minute interval.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
A lot of bangers.
Yes, a lot of, and the funny thing is we get to the end and there's still a lot I haven't done.
Yeah.
So I've just in the last couple of shows I've done I've started saying, well, it's got to the encore. And I normally finish on a Beatles song, and I got to the encore in one of the shows and someone shouted out a request. So the last couple of shows I said, does anyone have any requests? And everyone just keeps shouting all these songs.
Yeah.
And I try and pick out a few that I can hear.
That you actually know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so stressful.
Yeah.
I love it though.
Yeah.
But obviously a big part of, I think, why you've resonated with people and the fact that you can do this show comes as well for like a natural way of speaking and performing and like do you enjoy being on stage, you know, do you like speaking and presenting, is that something that you feel you enjoy it and like has brought something to your life, or do you find it quite nerve-wracking?
Well, a bit of both actually. It is very nerve-wracking, and when I did the first couple of shows I was physically shaking, and because it's such a new thing, and it was something that I've literally put together completely myself. It's not something that I've, it's not like I'm performing a theatre piece that's been written by someone else.
Or that you've seen anyone else do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I couldn't eat before it. I was shaking, and I just thought, I don't know how this is gonna go. And then I do like a little a welcome song, and I was kind of, I listened back and you could hear my voice kind of quavering through it. Then it got to the first sing-along, which is Who Put the Colours in the Rainbow? And as soon as I started playing it, everyone joined in, and all of a sudden the nerves just kind of went, and it just felt really, really nice and natural. And I've been getting nervous before each show because everyone's different. I don't know who's going to be there. I don't know how it's going to go. I've quite often finding a new venue, so whether the sound might be okay, but so far so good, pretty much.
And you found that people do sing, and enjoy the singing, because I guess that's what would freak me out, is that no one would sing and I'd just be there like.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So basically, I kind of wrote it so, like, to slightly in a foolproof way, so that if people don't sing, it's not the end of the world.
Okay.
So I can just basically sing all of them, and then when it gets to the end of the song, there's a bit of chat, a bit of talking, you know, some funny stories, and I try and like interlink each section and keep it flowing. So there's not really much time to have dead air in dead space. So if nobody sang along, which would be totally fine, and people can do what they want to do, they don't have to sing if they don't want to, then it would still be fine.
That's still brave.
Yeah.
I guess when you think about like primary school, like it seems like such a joyous thing, and it kind of feels almost paradoxical that there's like this aspect of nerves and like all this kind of stuff, and it's like, no, even though it's still like a joyous thing, it can still be a scary experience. And I think like people often think that about musicians and performing, it's like, oh, but you know, it's something that you love, like why would you be nervous? But it's interesting that, you know, even with like primary school hymns, it's still your career.
Yeah.
I wonder like how, because it feels like a lot of your content has been kind of audience led, like you've been creating stuff based on the feedback that you've received, sometimes more than has it felt like you've had to go with what your audience wants, or have you felt like you've been able to do what you want?
Well, it is a funny thing, because I definitely would not have thought, you know, that I would be doing this, but it's something that I have, you know, I absolutely love doing it, and it brings me a lot of like personal joy, mm-hmm. and puts me in like a happy place doing all of these songs and putting the show together. And I think one thing as well is that I put like the show is basically like a love letter to basically to communal singing, and also to the fact that we were so lucky to have music teachers at school that actually taught us not only these songs but other songs and all different styles, and got us all singing together, and just the fact that we all did sing together, which I think is so important and just such an amazing thing that not every like culture has, not every country has, like group communal singing, and it's also something that we don't really do necessarily as adults, unless you sing in like a community choir or you sing in a symphony chorus or whatever, because it kind of feels like there's a big gap between people that just sing for fun and then like professional singers. Mm-hmm. And I think that studying in a classical music degree and being in the community of professional singers, it feels like everyone I know has done singing in some form, and still does do it, whether they're singing in a church choir or singing, you know, as part of like, I don't know, the BBC singers or whatever. Actually, probably not the best example.
For now.
But the fact is that, you know, across the UK anyway, like most people grew up singing, and unless you sing, as I said, in a community choir or like at a football match or whatever, people don't really sing.
Or happy birthday.
Or happy birthday.
That is communal.
Yes, that is communal.
It's so true.
But I don't think that I would have originally thought of this had it not been for the reaction it got.
Yeah.
So talking about like, I guess, your day job as well, and the teaching, do you think, I mean, how do you feel about teaching? Is it something that you enjoy doing? Because we both have quite a complex relationship with teaching. Is TikTok and these shows something you would ultimately want to replace that, or do you kind of always want to have an element of that side of your work?
Yeah, well, I think it would be good to keep both going if possible. It has been quite tricky recently. So at the moment I teach in 4 schools.
Wow.
So I kind of cycle around and go in and do singing lessons one-on-one. So I actually don't do the assembly singing in the schools that I go to, because that's the head of music's job. I've been teaching for about 8 years now, something like that, 8 or 9 years. And as you say, like a bit of a, I don't know, complex.
Yeah, it depends on the school, depends on the students, depends on the time of year.
Depends on the parents as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah. I mean, most of my pupils and most of my parents have been lovely. There's like so many different issues that come with it, like should people do exams, even at young ages, should they be put in for exams, and some parents are very keen for them to be pushed through as many exams as quickly as possible, and also the content of what is on the syllabus, and how basically singing is structured in lessons I don't always agree with, and actually a lot of the songs on the syllabus I don't think are suitable to be sung, especially by the ages of the kids I teach.
As in they're too advanced for the voice
development? Yeah, some of them are too advanced, like the subject matter is not that suitable. Some of them are actually like, wildly inappropriate.
Nice.
You know, sea shanties about like going to Amsterdam and all that kind of stuff.
What was your relationship with your own singing education? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, well, I had, I didn't actually have any singing lessons until I was about 17. Yeah, 16, 17. So singing wasn't really encouraged on a like one-to-one level when I was growing up. But, you know, after primary school, when we sang all these classic tunes, I went to an all-boys grammar, and obviously it was the most uncool thing you could possibly do.
Mm.
And so while everyone else was outside playing football and rugby, I was in the music practice room playing the piano. And then obviously
in the rain.
Well, the funny thing is, it wouldn't have been any of those songs, because I didn't, like, I think from the age of, like, I don't know, 12 to probably 2 years ago, I hadn't even thought about most of these songs.
Yeah.
I teach a few of them. My relationship to singing when I was younger was quite like a fraught one.
Yeah.
Because I very much felt like it was, yeah, not the cool thing to do whatsoever. And it was only, as I said, when I did these like national courses and met other people that also loved this as well, that's when I was like, okay, no, this is like a legitimate thing to like, and it's okay. So I think there are probably about like 1,000 boys in the school. It was a big, like, yeah, big state grammar school down in Dorset. We didn't do any singing in assemblies. There was a bit of singing in music, but not really much after year 8. I tried to start a barbershop group, and then like 4 people out of like 1,000 boys were actually vaguely interested. And even then it just like petered off. Yeah, it's like, you only need 4, to be fair. And one of them was my brother, so
I was doing it. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
I did the same thing with my sister. I forced her into the chamber choir.
Mm.
Like, I used to go and find her. She would be snogging her boyfriend, and I would be like, "You should be in chamber choir."
There are more important things to do right
Literally.
Now. Yeah,
so
that's
funny.
I guess that, yeah, it, like, I was the same, that I had such like a difficult relationship with playing the trumpet. Like, it wasn't cool until I, yeah, had like a communal national youth orchestra
or music school.
Yeah.
And I guess that is a testament to the power of communal music.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's clearly very important.
Yeah, for sure.
Before the singing lessons and stuff, I guess, was piano the main focus for you?
Yeah. So I had piano lessons from about the age of 5, I think. And my piano teacher loved, like, Burt Bacharach and people like that. And so she taught me a lot of those kind of 60s and 70s tunes, as well as doing the grades. So I did, like, every single piano grade up to grade 8. I haven't told any of my pupils this, but I actually didn't do any of the singing grades growing up.
Wow.
I didn't do a single one. And so when I started having singing lessons when I was about 17, my teacher was like an ex-Helden tenor, he used to sing at Bayreuth and things like that. And he was about 70, 75, like late 70s. But his voice was absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And it was a very, rogue way of teaching, actually, thinking back on it. Like, it was like some of the things were just very, I don't know. Like, he used to get me to like slap his belly and stuff while he was singing, and like stand on him while he was like lying on the floor.
One of my trumpet teachers did that as well.
Really? Yeah. And I was like, if I did that now in school,
immediate dismissal.
Like, safeguarding alarm bells would be like going off everywhere. But I mean, it was very inspiring in a lot of ways, but totally nuts. Yeah, so
I guess that, yeah, it makes sense why you have a kind of broader perspective on people's taking exams and stuff.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Like, yeah, I have a friend that's playing, I think he's on trial in Gothenburg, plays French horn. He only ever took grade 5.
Yeah,
I love that.
And it's just, yeah, I mean, grades are such like a funny construct that pupils, I mean, and especially their parents are obsessed with.
Yeah.
It's the parents.
Yeah.
They just want to show off.
Yeah. But then the children absorb that, and then the children then become obsessed, and it's like...
It's so hard. At school, they put up the grades.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, did either of you go to Cambridge?
No.
At Cambridge, they had a... the main building is Senate House, and they put all the grades outside at the end of the term, and it tells you, like, what you got. And so, like, everyone's going up to these these sheets, and they're like... Oh, this is, this person got this, and this person got this, and this is what happens at school. They put up the grades, and they say they put up the marks as well.
What, like on a sheet of paper?
Yeah. And so people are going, you know, the girls are going up to, like, I mostly teach at girls' schools. Actually, no, I just started at a boys' school. But anyway, the school I've been teaching at the longest is a girls' primary school. And they all go up to the sheet and say, oh, I got a distinction. Oh, I got a merit. Why didn't I get a distinction? I think that's so tough. And then they're going home to their parents and think, oh, you should have got a distinction, not a merit. I think you did so well to get a merit.
It is really hard to get a merit. I'm impressed.
It's hard to do the grades themselves.
It's hard to pass.
It's, it's hard to get in a room, especially at that age, with someone you've never met, a complete stranger, and perform in front of a complete stranger. Sometimes they're nice, sometimes they're not. Sometimes it can be quite scary.
Yeah.
Especially when they went back to school post-COVID, all the examiners wore masks and gloves and all sorts of stuff.
And so far away, in a big empty room.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember when I used to do my piano grades, I was absolutely terrified. Genuinely, like, palpitations. To be fair, the place I did my exams was quite a creepy. It was someone's house, and the waiting room was just like the living room, basically. And they had, like, in my mind it was all in black and white, and they had like a TV in the corner which was like basically static. They had one of those like Japanese water features with like the a bit of water dropping.
Creepy.
Yeah, and it was really creepy. And you can hear the exam next door happening, and everyone in the room is just like staring into the abyss. You know,
sounds like Cracks in the Studios.
Yeah.
I was literally thinking of that.
Where you can like hear the audition going on next door, and everyone's sitting there like in the waiting room, like
warm up in this attic room.
Yeah, waiting for the execution.
And just think, like, if that's your entry into music making.
Yeah.
It's not really encouraging, is it?
No.
For like a positive experience.
No.
I do have mixed feelings about exams, very mixed. And I get that it's great to have a goal to work towards. And some of the things you pick up in like an exam context are great, like just the ability to be able to perform and to memorise a piece, all of that stuff's great. But even like the other things, some of the oral tests and the sight reading are just not really that helpful, I don't think.
Yeah.
And I think there are better ways to be, if you are doing an exam, to work on your general musicianship.
I guess like a massive, maybe going back to the beginning, like a big part of why a lot of people resonate to you is a big escapism.
Yeah.
A lot of these songs, and kind of like what you were saying, like obviously our world and even the music world, like forget it, like it's quite depressing if you think too long and hard about all of that. But why do you think it's important that you exist online? And kind of how have you seen the impact on people's like mental health and well-being and just being a place to kind of escape and have that purity? What's the impact of that?
I think social media is like, it's such a huge, it's a behemoth of like an issue. And it's like a double-sided thing as well, because on the one hand, it can be a place of escapism and it can be a place of refuge. And if you are someone that is socially anxious or, you know, you find it very hard to meet people or make friends, then it can be an amazing place to find your tribe, find your community online, whatever it is. And that's why something that you might think is extremely niche, and not necessarily what I do, but lots of other people have their niches and get huge followings from it, because it's something that people wouldn't necessarily kind of come across in, let's say, the real world. A lot of people do like TikTok lives or Instagram lives, and people just sit all night watching these live streams where they might cosplay or something or whatever.
Have you ever done an all night primary school?
Not an all night one. But
I can imagine your neighbours would be like, shut up.
I don't care,
you put the colours in the rainbow.
I think it almost got to that point during lockdown, because I got engaged actually the week before.
Congrats.
The week before lockdown. And she's American, and she had never heard any of these songs before.
What an education.
By the end of week two, she was like, why do you keep singing songs about vegetables? it was slightly torturous for her. But I was doing, when this started picking up, then I was doing a lot of these live streams, and I didn't do an all-night one. Social media it's got definitely like a lot of positives to it. But I've been finding more and more like really, really like severe negatives to social media in lots of ways. I think that it's interesting actually being on social media and also teaching at primary schools.
Yes.
Because some people have, they have no connection with social media at that age, which is great. I think it is extremely hard to kind of stop people under the age of 13 from being on social media. But I think they really, really should, if possible. But I mean, it's so hard to stop them from being on it. But those that aren't on it, they don't really even think about it. But those that are, it just consumes them.
You can tell which ones are and which ones aren't.
Yeah, exactly. And I hear children as young as like 5, like singing songs that I know are like TikTok viral.
Yeah.
I think you've been just like watching TikTok all night. And a lot of my pupils come in and say, oh, can I sing this song? They want to sing a song that is viral, and they'll know like 10 seconds of the song, and they want to sing that bit of the song which is viral on TikTok. And you know, you're not technically allowed to be on TikTok if you're under 13. But I have, because I teach privately at people's houses after school as well, and I go back and I see some of these kids on their phone, you know, literally as soon as they get home, mum, where's your phone? I want to look at TikTok or whatever. And they will literally sit for like 2 hours just scrolling through it. And that's at the age of like 8, you know, and think what that is doing. And actually, you know, some of the videos that come up, you can't really police it that well.
No.
And especially a lot of the live streams, because the way that TikTok work is every like 5 videos you scroll through will come up with like someone doing a live stream.
Mm.
And I've actually kind of stopped doing lives because I really don't like the culture around it. And there are a lot of really, really inappropriate lives, like completely inappropriate, you know, people, you know, undressing or all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
And a lot of the comments are just horrendous as well. So, and it's not just the lives, a lot of like the videos that come up are also just wildly inappropriate for children to look at. And I guess, you know, if you are the company, you could argue, well, they're not supposed to be on it anyway, because it's, you know, you've got to say, I am over the age of 13, but you can't.
But anyone can do that.
Exactly.
And in terms of like, because obviously a lot of your career focuses on being on social media. Has it had like negative impact on you?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. I've tried to come to terms with it a bit more, but I think it is hard, because when you create things online, and you know, I'm sure you guys know this, like if you put something online and it doesn't quite have the reaction you think it might have had, or it doesn't, you know, it's because social media is such a tangible thing. It's like you got 20 likes on this post as opposed to the last time where you got 50 likes. You think, oh no, what have I done wrong?
Yeah.
You think it's all about yourself, where, you know, most of the time it's not at all. It's just about whatever the algorithm picks up, or whatever is like slightly more controversial that people might comment on. So yeah, I've stopped looking at likes, and I try and keep it on top of comments and stuff, but I've stopped kind of like going through every single comment and trying to reply to everyone, because it's really draining, and it just puts you in a really negative mindset if you're constantly kind of comparing yourself, not even to your own post, but to other people's posts, and you think, oh, you know, this person got like 2 million views on literally just like laughing at another video, you know, like reacting to another video. And so you think, well, what have I done wrong? I did, you know, I made a video about Chopin, and I was like, this is really cool, I find this really interesting.
Yeah.
And it got like basically no reaction.
Yeah.
But a few people, like a few weeks later, and I felt kind of bad because I spent a while like, you know, going around and like filming this and putting it together. And then a few weeks later, a couple of people completely separately said, oh, I love that video you did on Chopin. It was completely different to what you normally do.
Aww.
But so I guess different people like different things. But
yeah.
I guess you have to stay true to what your interests are as well. Because, you know, much as I'm sure you enjoy the primary school stuff, there are other things in your musical life to fulfill.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just do that all the time. So I think, like, no matter what the likes are, we find this as well, I think. Like, sometimes you just need to creatively do make something for yourself, you know, that's just more in line with, I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
No, for sure. I mean, otherwise it can become so like you're just hopping from one thing to the next, and you're basing all your
engagement,
internal
happiness
on like external factors, whereas actually that can just stop at any moment.
Mm.
Like, you know, what if somebody else came along on TikTok doing basically what you did, but I don't know, people preferred them for whatever reason. It's like everything is so fragile, and actually as long as you're kind of finding kind of authenticity or whatever in your own work and enjoying it, then it doesn't really matter what the likes are. But then it's hard if that's what your business is based on a lot of the time.
Have any of your students kind of found you on TikTok?
To be honest, not that many.
Okay.
A couple of them have. And again, with those pupils, they've been like, how many followers do you have today? Like this week, have you got loads more followers? Because that's all they're interested in, like how many followers you've got.
Because it is pretty cool that how many you have got, I guess.
But even the fact that you're saying that is like, why is it like, it's so funny that that's becomes like...
And that's actually something that I've changed my mindset on how I approach social media. Because at first, I think when things start picking up, you think, oh, you know, this is amazing. I'm getting all of these followers on a certain platform. And I need to just keep doing more and more to get more followers. And then you think, actually, that's such an... That is... You're fighting a losing battle then, because it will never be enough. Because, you know, even if you've got like 1 million followers on the platform, you'd be like, yeah, I've got 1 million, but why don't I have 2 million? I think the main thing is just finding the right content that is true to what you... like your vision, like your mindset, and finding a way to bring some positivity to the world online. And I think that's what's great about what you do on this podcast, because you're literally talking about things that musicians don't necessarily normally talk about. And I've not, you know, I've heard other podcasts talking about, you know, if you're in business or whatever, you talk about, you know, I found it really hard to set up my £1 million business or whatever. I feel really depressed. But you know, musicians, it's, I think, like, the whole great thing about this kind of primary school thing that's picked up is just building that community. And I think that musicians need to have each other's backs, for sure. So being able to talk about all of this stuff is amazing in what you do in this podcast.
Thank you.
But I guess you're not one of many in the sort of viral music.
Well, that's what I was going to say, like, music, or like especially classical music, TikTok and all social media, it feels very like classical music as a whole is very behind everything else. So actually a lot of classical music social media is still like very positive, or very like kind of
happy clappy
or just like not very real.
I actually do a little bit of work for Decca Classics.
Nice.
As like a social media person, not in terms of like posting for them, but I essentially like scour social media for what's happening in the classical music world, and you know, I make a pack every month of like who's doing what, and just they kind of keep on top of what everybody's doing.
100 days of practice
in classical music, whether it's something more fun or whether it's like an existing artist or whatever. But yeah, classical music is in an interesting place, and there's some people doing amazing things, like really, really amazing things on social media. And I think the more that people who don't have an interest in classical music can engage with it, the better. So if social media is a way to do it, then that's great. Whether it's through like funny videos, you know, it's like, I've seen quite a few of the things like, you know, people in 1720 when Bach dropped this banger, and they're like just like raving to Carter and Fugue or whatever. Or it could be more like slightly more educational, or it could just be like a play along video.
Yeah.
With like, I think it's like the London Philharmonic Orchestra.
Oh yeah.
They do a lot of, is it them or is it LSO?
No, it's LPO, where they do LPO. Like
they have the score that goes along underneath it. Yeah, that's great. I love that.
Those are great. Yeah.
But it is that thing of like, I don't know, I feel some people are very against like what they call the dumbing down of classical music, and it's like, no, it is just bringing it into the relevance of modern day society. And like, you can't have something that's supposedly relevant and isn't on one of the biggest, you know, social media is so ingrained in our lives now, and we can't extract ourselves from it, so we've got to go with it.
It's actually been really interesting talking to classical musicians about it, because some people have a mindset of, oh, I wish I could do social media, but I can't do it. I'm too far removed.
I've heard a lot of people say that.
Because some people's accounts on Instagram especially go really like mega viral, like not necessarily viral, but like they get lots of followers just by literally recording themselves practicing the clarinet or something, or the cello or whatever, and they'll just have like a post, maybe like three or four posts a week of them just practicing, and those posts will just get a lot of traction. But then you get some like the big, like people that are doing really big things in classical music that don't want to touch social media.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, no, it's not for me. I wouldn't want to do that.
Don't get me started on their websites.
Yeah.
Some of these like stratospheric musicians. Like,
yeah, I kind of feel like, I don't know. Are you not doing it because you don't want to, or because you think it's like too, I don't know, dumbed down, as you say, maybe.
But we need to have those people on there that are doing something different, that aren't just going with the trends or whatever. Like, imagine having somebody completely, like, if you are famous enough in the real world, you will get that many, like, you'll get followers on. And then if you just put your own stamp on what you think social media should be, that's going to change things for the better.
I saw a hilarious video of Carl Jenkins.
You mean Meghan Markle?
/ Meghan Markle. Yeah, saying that I am not Meghan Markle. I'm Carl Jenkins.
Imagine having to release that statement.
Yeah, that's hilarious. But you know, he did it really well, and I think more and more people are getting on it, and even you know someone like Andrew Lloyd Webber, who he doesn't need to do it, and whatever your views on him are. But he does like duet videos and things like that. And that's quite fun. I think more people could do it.
No, that's true.
I think you know, I totally 100% respect anyone's decision as to whether or not they do social media or not. And for a lot of people, it isn't the right thing, and it would bring like an extra level of anxiety to something that is already so, you know, it's so precarious in terms of work. And if you're putting yourself out there, and a lot of people don't like filming themselves, which is it is a very, very tough thing to do, to set up a camera and film yourself and put it out there for the world to see. And I think actually before TikTok, I felt extremely self-conscious about putting up anything online in that way of filming yourself doing it. And then when TikTok came along, because it was so informal, I was like, oh, it doesn't really matter, because it's basically just kids dancing anyway.
Yeah.
So that's why I was, in a way, it kind of, for me, it helped a lot of my kind of self-doubt and like perfectionism and stuff like that, because it didn't matter as much.
It still slightly feels like that.
Yeah.
I still feel like I want to put some videos on TikTok that I wouldn't put on Instagram.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know what that's about. Yeah. Do you have that one already?
Do you think it's because our Instagram feels like there's a lot of people we know following us?
Right? My family are all on it, but then none of them are on TikTok. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just feels more like important, like in terms of what we say on there, rather than TikTok, where it can be a bit more like throwaway and even slightly more controversial. So what we normally do at the end is a kind of like win of the week. So we just say something small from our week that's been like a positive, I guess, or like something we're proud of, or.
I'll go first.
Okay, go on.
I've never gone first, I don't think. I finished my CBT, 10 weeks of CBT therapy on Tuesday. Which it's been like amazing.
Yeah.
It's been completely like, I was very skeptical of CBT before I started. And it's just been amazing. And like, as much as I didn't resonate with some of the exercises that we did, I did do all the homework and like I kind of threw myself into it.
That's awesome.
Like I finished on Tuesday and that was good. And like felt like really nicely rounded off. And I felt that I could be really honest with my therapist about like what had worked and what hadn't worked, which is usually I'm like with my last like awful therapist, I didn't give any feedback because I was too scared that
she'd
be...
There was no like mutual trust there.
No, but I was very honest with this one, which was bueno.
Yes, legend.
Yes.
So what did the course kind of entail?
We started off, I think I'd referred myself because I was feeling like overwhelmed with a lot of things. So we did like working on what are my symptoms and then what are my like negative automatic thoughts that kind of come up. I worked especially on like audition rejection and that kind of stuff, which was tricky because... same as so many therapists. Like, they don't really understand freelance musician life.
Mm.
So she was like, so can you do like another audition? And I was like...
I've done 25.
Or like, you know, she kept calling them interviews, not auditions.
Right.
And like these kind of things that like don't really matter. But like, so yeah, did a bit of that. And I've just done actually a whole half an hour video on our Patreon about what went down in CBT. Cool. Yeah. But yeah, it was great.
Like, everyone subscribe to Patreon.
Do you have a Patreon?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you can, in all honesty, just tell them to go to ours.
Yeah. I don't know, we're not rivals. No,
we will get you to shout out your TikTok and everything. Do you have your win of the week down and ready?
Well, I've got a... Yeah, okay. I'm going to say something from last night. So last night I did this show and... I already mentioned one thing which I loved, which was the fact that people came on their own to see it.
Yeah.
And there's just something about that. It actually made me feel quite emotional.
Yeah.
Because it's so tough doing anything on your own. And some people, you know, find it very, very hard to even get out the door on their own. And the fact that they've made the effort to you know, buy a ticket, come on their own and travel to this unknown location with a load of people they don't know singing along, it's quite a scary thing. So
it's massive.
That was for me like a definitely just an amazing, like, beautiful moment. But there's I met a couple last night which they taught music in China.
Wow.
In like a really rural province of China, and they said that during lockdown or you know whenever it was, they would get a school bus with the kids every day to the school, and they all wanted music to play on the school bus. And every single day, they said every single day, they'd play my videos on a Bluetooth speaker because it made them feel happy and it reminded them of home because they couldn't go home. So, yeah.
That has made me so emotional.
And this is in some like really random rural province of China that they were like blasting out these songs on the Bluetooth speaker.
That must make you feel so like.
And they came along to the show last night, and it was So that was an amazing story.
Yeah.
Have you had any proposals at?
Not yet.
I was gonna say that'd be like the funniest place to be like, I'm gonna propose to my girlfriend. Tonight.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
I
thought you were going to say like a couple came to my show and they got engaged.
Well, actually it would be a good place to propose because you know, at the last show there was a vicar. So the vicar's
immediate
there
marriage. Just
get married.
And I'm there on the piano. I can play the hymns, you know, and then everyone else can join in with we will support you and all that stuff. So
forget friends and family.
Yeah,
you just
exactly.
Have random as witnessing
weddings.
Yeah.
Well, I also sing with a function band.
Okay.
And I've been doing that for about 10 years now. And so I've sung at lots of weddings, mostly as part of the band in the evening.
Oh, wow.
In the past, sung in the choirs for weddings and things like that, but not had a wedding yet.
A joint venture.
That'd be fun. Yeah. Well, actually, the funny thing is a lot of people, when they do get married, they sing these songs because they are, if they didn't go to church or whatever, they'll think, okay, what songs are suitable? So I have been to weddings where I've played like One More Step Along the World I'll Go or Shine Jesus Shine, and everyone just loves it. Everyone joins in and sings songs. So, I think actually that I wouldn't be surprised if it does happen. Actually,
one day.
Yeah.
Hattie.
So, I was like, oh, I shouldn't say this because it's too personal. Blah blah blah. Don't care.
We'll just cut it out.
This is a personal podcast, right?
Yeah, literally.
So
yeah.
2 days ago, I made a year self-harm free.
Woo.
Yes.
Which was like massive. And I actually like glazed straight past it and didn't even realise. I only realised yesterday. I think that kind of shows that with things like addiction, the first few months I could never imagine myself making it to a year. But then like recently it's just become such a thing in the background, which is like amazing. It feels amazing now that it doesn't have this like sort of struggle every day of getting through. You know what I mean?
You're not checking the app every day.
Yeah.
Like, one more day.
Yeah, exactly. So now like it just felt massive and quite, it sort of says a lot that I even
didn't
missed
notice.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's great.
So like that is the win of the year really, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Year and a day.
Year and a day.
Very good.
So but this has been so lovely.
Yeah, thank you so much,
thank
James.
You.
Yeah,
it's been so lovely.
Thanks for
hosting
me.
Way.
That's right.
You got to shout out your.
Oh yes.
So tell us your Instagram, TikTok, and then tell us the shows you got coming up. So anything else you got coming up?
Yeah, I don't know when this will go out in terms of like show dates and stuff.
Just give it all, and then we'll.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So, yeah, the TikTok and Instagram pages are James. at James B. Partridge. And the show is called Primary School Assembly Bangers Live. But it's not just the primary school songs. We do some musical theatre, we've got Disney, we've got like TV theme tunes from our childhoods, we've got all sorts of stuff.
It's
so
all there.
It's all there. It's just like a total like escapism, nostalgia fest. And yeah, that's the live show. And I've got... so today, on the day of recording, I'm going to go up to Leicester. Then tomorrow I'm in Cardiff. And then I'm doing a load of other shows in June and July as well.
It may be an obvious announcement, but it is no longer 2023. So these next dates that James announces are completely irrelevant, but we thought it'd be nice to keep them in because it's really lovely to hear what he's up to. But please do check out what he's doing in 2024. Hattie and I are really rubbish at getting these episodes out in a timely fashion. Look, we're mentally ill. What can I say?
Doing some cool venue. I'm going to Southwold Pier.
Wow.
And singing on at the end of the pier. And
don't fall
then
off.
Doing Sheffield and York and a few other places.
Oh,
as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
A lot of travelling.
Yes, yeah.
What does the future look like after the shows? Anything fun or just kind of...
I've got a load of wedding gigs with this function band I sing with. And also, I'm going to do a Christmas show. Spoiler. I'm putting together a Christmas show and this will be like...
That would be great.
The Christmas assembly bangers with like Christmas number ones and
little
like
donkey.
Exactly, and then we'll all have like Christmas crackers and mince pies and mulled wine, and it's just going to be a wholesome like.
We will be there.
So
that
yes,
so
I'll let you know when it is. And,
thank you.
Yeah, that will be a lot of fun. I think. Yeah.
Amazing.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you
yeah.
so much.
Yeah,
woo, woo.
Great.